This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Did a downriver man suffer a leg cramp 35 years ago, or did he murder his four young children? That depends on whom you ask.
This crazy case that, you know, years later takes these twists that you didn't think would happen. You know, it was one of the most notorious crimes in Metro Detroit history.
When Larry Delisle asked for clemency, his ex-wife dropped a massive bombshell. This is the Daily J on the Case. I'm Zach Clark. Christy, why don't we start with a little bit of the background here? Because some of us, like me, aren't nearly as familiar with it as somebody like you.
And I am very familiar with it because I grew up downriver. This happened in Wyandotte. And when you grow up downriver, this is a case that people still talk about. And I remember at the time, you know, watching the footage, I was like 10, 12, watching the footage of this car being pulled out of the water and driving down Jefferson and Wyandotte and seeing all the news crews out there. What happened exactly? At 9 p.m. on August 3rd, 1989, Larry Delisle and his wife Suzanne, they were young parents, but they had four kids. They spent the day with their kids driving around shopping, getting ice cream. They were in a big old station wagon, a 1977 LTD. At the end of the day, Larry Delisle drove his wife and his four kids through a barricade into the Detroit River. I think they sailed out about 50 feet. Larry and his wife both swam to safety. All four of the children died. The children ranged in age from 8 years old to 8 months old. When police interviewed him, he gave two different stories, and that kind of tripped him up from the beginning. He said he had a leg cramp and also that the accelerator on the car stuck and he couldn't make it stop. So he said basically that this leg cramp made him jam down on the accelerator. And so there was a lot of talk initially about whether there was something wrong with the car. The headlines were basically, father says leg cramp in faulty car caused his family to die. Like the car was the thing at fault.
But then what happened from there was he was taken to Lansing to talk to the state police. And he says he was interrogated for hours and hours and hours and hours. And here's what really tripped him up, Christy, was ultimately he confesses. And he says, I lost my mind. I didn't know my kids were in the car. I wasn't even thinking. And I just plowed in. But he says, that's not what really happened. I was coerced. And here's the thing, though. With the 1977 Ford station wagon you're talking about, there was an issue. They did have an accelerator issue. He didn't make that up. Did his car have that? I don't know. Is that what made him do it? I don't know. But that was a real issue. And that really helped him, at least kind of, because I'll be the spoiler now. He's been in prison for 34 years. He was convicted of killing all four of his children. No parole, nothing.
And they had dueling investigators at his trial. I mean, really in-depth, huge headline trial where they did have engineering experts say, yeah, we tested this car. Actually, I watched a Netflix documentary on this the other day, too, to see what the experts had said. And some of them said that they tested this specific car after it was taken out of the river. And and the accelerator was stuck on 55 miles an hour, and they could recreate one time in the test. Numerous times they couldn't recreate it, but one time they could recreate the accelerator getting stuck. But the other issue, and what the other experts would tell you and said in the trial, Larry Delisle was a mechanic. His father was a mechanic. His uncle was a mechanic. They came from a line of mechanics. Putting the car in neutral would have stopped it. And that's where he starts to say in the investigation and in the trial and at various other places, well, you know, I kind of blanked out. I don't know what was happening, you know, because it didn't make any sense that he didn't go to another option like turning the car off.
And there were no brake marks. Even if the accelerator was stuck, you could still apply the brake. But he says he couldn't because he had a leg cramp. I want to mention his father really quickly because as we dig into that car, in 1988, so about a year before this whole thing happens, in that same exact car, Larry Delisle's father, Richard, drives to a park, shoots himself in the head in that car, unalives himself, and Larry's stepmother gives him this car. And so now, five people have died in this car,
yes.
His father and all of his children.
And that was one of the things the investigators talked about was, I mean, and this is just mind-blowing, I think, to anybody, when you talk about mental illness, and one of the things they were kind of pointing out as maybe him having mental illness was that the driver's side, even after that car was pulled out of 50 feet of water in the Detroit River, the driver's side of it was covered in his father's blood. And he had been driving his family around in that for quite some time, and they never even cleaned it out.
Christy, we've been talking about this story, you and I, for a couple months now. We've been doing these Daily J on the case episodes. Ironically, as we were talking about this, I don't want to say randomly, but unbeknownst to almost everybody, Larry Delisle comes up for clemency. He's not eligible for parole. He's asking the governor to commute his sentence. And that happened a couple of weeks ago. We talked to crime beat extraordinaire George Hunter from the Detroit News, who's fabulous. Christy, before we get into that, we're going to hear from George, but why don't we hear from Larry Delisle himself? Because we actually have, even though he hasn't spoken, we have communication from Larry Delisle from 10 years ago.
And that is one of the things that is so fascinating about this case is that Larry Delisle has never spoken to the media. He's been very adamant he will not speak to the media. But he did, in a way, speak to WWJ almost exactly 10 years ago. One of the anchors, Roberta Giacina, wrote him a letter. She asked him very detailed questions, and he responded with answers to every single one of her questions. And there are so many interesting things in what he says. I mean, he says he's made hundreds of friends in prison, and they're helping him pull through. And one of the things that I think is so fascinating is Roberta says in this letter, what would you like to say to all the people who remember this case, who followed the trial, who were with you through this whole thing? And he said the lie detector test was faulty. It was a ruse. And he says one of the things that the people who think about this case should think about is that he is, quote, terrified of deep water and he can't swim. So why would he drive his car into the river thinking that he would survive knowing that he can't swim?
I'm going to ask you a question. How did he get out of the river?
Obviously, he had some kind of skills because, I mean, he floated to the surface some way.
You and I both know the Detroit River has a very notoriously swift current. Not being able to swim and being able to get out of the river are not two things that can happen at the same time.
Exactly.
I'm not saying he's guilty or not, but I know how the Detroit River moves. So we've got one letter. You think that was the bombshell, Christy? It is not. We mentioned that his wife lived. They ultimately get divorced a couple years later after he's convicted. She disappears, right? Starts a new life. But the whole time, at least to our knowledge, the public knowledge, she backed up his claims that he did not do this. Well, at this clemency hearing, her lawyer shows up, reads a letter, and just blows up the whole thing. And remember, George Hunter, our crime reporter extraordinaire, he was there for all of this.
Suzanne Delisle had always supported her husband throughout this whole thing, and she said it was a cramp. She tried to grab the wheel, and before it plunged into the river, I said, I may be jumping ahead of myself here, but that was the thing that bowled everybody over. I can't think anything that would be a stronger impediment to him getting out than that, frankly. I mean, there's no one else in the world who could testify either for or against him that's going to carry more weight than the only person who was in the car when it happened who's still alive.
She flipped on him. Unbelievable 30 years later.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And one of the things, too, is when you look at these two letters, so the letter that Larry DeLisle wrote to WWJ.
Because now we can side by side these.
Yes. And he says specifically, the question is asked about his wife, and he says, well, the children looked too much like me. And so it was better for me to set her free. Like, it was an altruistic act.
Right. He was doing her a favor. It wasn't she was leaving him. He was letting her go.
Yes. He was letting her go, and he was in prison, and she doesn't deserve this. And so basically he's saying, like, for altruistic reasons, we're not together anymore.
And she never disputed that until right now.
Yes. But in the letter that Suzanne wrote, she says, it was not until after the trial and Larry went to prison that I was able to break free from him. Even after he killed our children, Larry had absolute control over me. He even tried to convince me over the phone from prison that I should kill myself.
And the letter also talks about, I believe, another attempt by Larry DeLisle to kill her. And the only one child alive at the time was Brian DeLisle, the oldest, who was 8 when he was killed. There had been an attempt on the life of Brian DeLisle and his mother previously.
He said, I was tired of all the problems, and so I tried to purposely, you know, light the boiler, whatever, the basement thing on fire there. But he did indeed confess to that during the interrogation, that he had tried to set the house on fire and kill, I believe only one of the kids had been born at that point. But that was what Suzanne confirmed that now. And that's, again, that's shocking. That's a left turn in this case that nobody expected.
Why did I tell everyone that I believed him? Larry had total control over me.
And there was something else, too. In the back of her mind, once he was convicted, she thinks, this is it. This is life without, he's not going anywhere. George told us without this letter from her, it was a coin flip. In response, she's married again. He said, well, that just sounds like her new husband.
And that's one of the things that, you know, throughout, she says, you know, he made me dependent on him. And then him, when she tries to make sure that he stays in prison, him saying, well, she's just channeling what her husband's telling her to say. Those two things make it seem like what she's saying is obviously based in fact. But obviously, Suzanne now wants to be sure that he stays there. And so she went to these sort of extreme measures of writing a letter. But she says, too, just like him, that she will never talk to the media. She will not be part of a documentary. She will not do anything other than write a letter. And she doesn't want anybody to ask her about it. And she doesn't want to talk to the media after this.
Here's the thing, though, Christy, when we do these stories and, you know, working in the news business and doing stories like this, sometimes, you know, you look at them as it's a job and you look at these people as objects. You don't do it on purpose, but it happens that way. And it's really important to note that there are 4 dead children here, Brian, Melissa, Catherine, and Emily. I'm not judging the former Mrs. DeLisle, but what she said in that letter was, because she has teenaged children now, she has a new family, I think there's 2 of them, they were unaware completely of all of this happening. So they had no idea that she had had another life and that there were other children. And you made the point, and it was heartbreaking. That means that there are no pictures anywhere. I mean, Larry doesn't have any. He's in prison. They were basically erased from the face of this earth, and it's just disgusting.
In the documentary that they did on Netflix, I mean, you see these are beautiful children. I mean, they're sitting in church. They're laughing. They're active children. And one of the things about the story that I remember very specifically hearing as a kid, because it really stuck in my head, is the fact that the baby was still strapped in her car seat when she was taken out of the car, because I think that really stuck with the first responders and really, I think, devastated a lot of them that they had to pull this poor baby who was strapped into her car seat, and neither one of her parents went back for her.
And that was one of the things that was used against Larry, was he basically waited for first responders to show up. He didn't do anything. He never turned around. This is basically, Christy, the end of Larry's story, in that if you're rejected for clemency, the odds of you ever getting it ever again, even the opportunity for clemency, is about 0. And, you know, George told us that he thought it was a coin flip ahead of time. He said more than once to us, Christy, that there is no stronger testimony than what she gave. Don't move. There is more of the Daily J on the case coming up next.
Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things that Larry himself wrote to WWJ was the question was about his chances of getting out, basically. And he says, he goes back over the trial, you know, he writes about this at length, and he says, eventually in the Sixth Circuit Court, there was a rare hearing, and all 15 judges sat down to hear my case, and not one could see anything more than, and he has this underlined, circumstantial evidence, as opposed to guilt beyond reasonable doubt. He's saying they suppressed evidence, but he says, I mean, to this day, that the case against him is circumstantial, and for that reason, he should be released.
And if you go farther back in time, the judge does the sentencing, and at sentencing, the judge says, I'm bound by law. You were convicted of first-degree murder in Michigan. That's automatic life, no parole. But he says, I'm not sure if you're guilty. The judge out loud on the record in the courtroom at sentencing says, I'm not so sure about that. And so Larry has all these legs to stand on. And in fact, so much so that the Innocence Project, which is wildly well-respected, that's what brought this to our attention was them, that they were working on this. And nobody's saying, at least they're not, that he didn't do it. They're saying the trial was meh, and that even if he did do it and the trial was meh, it's been 35 years, he's not dangerous, let him out.
They focused a lot on the 1993 appeal that went to the Supreme Court, by the way. They didn't hear it. It was put before the Supreme Court, and they declined to hear it, the U.S. Supreme Court. But they based that on a lot of that, which was the media bias, the jurors having heard his confession that had been thrown out of court. There was the claim that the Ford vehicles, and that one in particular, was one of several Fords. And they showed evidence that these Fords did indeed have issues with their accelerators getting stuck. And they focused also, they mentioned one of the attorneys who had worked on his earlier appeal in 93, he testified as well. And he told me that they're not focusing on all that. The main thing they want to try to impart was that Delisle is not a danger.
I mean, it's basically a question of intent, because clearly, I mean, there's no question that he was behind the wheel of the car that drove his family into the Detroit River.
Undisputed facts.
The question is, did he mean to do it, or was it a faulty accelerator, or was it this like overwhelming leg cramp? And obviously he served 35 years for this, and his wife until now had stood by him and said it was a leg cramp, it was the car, he would never hurt any of us. And now his wife has flipped, and that changes the entire story and the chances of Larry ever getting out of prison.
And one of the other things, too, really quickly, this was a national story. And I think part of that was because, you know, we have such vivid memories, I do, of the O.J. Simpson trial because cameras were allowed then. This was the first trial in Michigan history, the Larry Delisle trial, that cameras and photographs were allowed in the courtroom. So it was like the Vietnam War. It was war on television for the first time. You're seeing things you've never seen before. And that also added to Larry's story. But you know, this is one of those stories, Christy, that is going to drive people nuts because we will never, ever know what happened. He's not going to change his story. Unfortunately, all the other children are no longer. We're never going to know.
There's never going to be a way to know if that accelerator stuck. And if the accelerator did stick, was there really no way to stop that car?
Right, because one of the things George said to us, and I love the way he said it, that two things can be true. The accelerator could have been stuck, but that didn't mean that he couldn't have stopped it.
One thing that often gets lost in these discussions is that two things can be possible at the same time. Police can indeed coerce statements and things like that, but that doesn't mean the statements aren't true. Or they could have forgotten to give Miranda rights. Procedural things don't necessarily mean that that's innocence.
The prosecutor waited 7 seconds, like had them beat out 7 seconds, because it took 7 seconds for the accelerator to get hit and the water to get hit. Between the time the accelerator was hit and that car hit the water, it was 7 seconds. So in 7 seconds, you can't turn the wheel.
It takes a split second. So I think, Christy, this is just going to be one of those cases that will live in Michigan lore forever. And I think for Larry Delisle, the next thing you can hear about him is when he passes, because I cannot see him going anywhere. This story is just going to kind of hang around forever. I think most people have an idea what they think happened, but as far as like, you know, a green check mark saying this is it, never going to happen.
Nope.
Today's big thanks go out to George Hunter and Christy Strasser. Check out WWJNewsRadio.com for the top local news stories on demand 24/7. I'm Zach Clark, and this is The Daily J on the Case. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!